Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
You're listening to the MLS Multiplex podcast with contributors from MLSMultiplex.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the MLS Multiplex podcast. Per usual, it is Drew here with Josh and Connor talking all things Major League Soccer and soccer in North America, U.S., Canada, Mexico, the whole nine yards. So thanks again for tuning in to another episode. It's been a while. I think it's been a little over a week since we last talked to each other about soccer. So before we get into another fun episode, I know semesters are cranking up for us, Connor. So how's school? You're nodding your head no, so I'm not looking forward to asking this, but how's the week been treating you with school starting in Toronto?
I am dreading this semester. It's going to be hell. Currently, I'm enrolled in 7 courses. I should be enrolled in 5, but I can't decide which courses I want to take because they all suck. So I'm trying to figure that out. But other than that, the Jays got George Springer. Not George. Is it George?
It's George.
Yes.
Shouldn't you know?
I should know, but I had a brain
fart. Did you think Jerry Springer? Was that who you were thinking of?
They don't have that show in Canada, Drew.
Oh, man, no. You have no idea who Jerry Springer is.
Wait, Jerry, recognize.
Is you that are not the father.
You've probably seen the memes.
Probably. What? I don't know which show that's from.
It's a daytime TV show, talk show.
Okay, what's it called?
Jerry Springer show?
It's just Jerry Springer.
Oh, it's just
like
a Jerry Springer show? Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. You heard Mari? It's the same thing.
Okay, I'll pretend like I'll assume we kept that in, but who knows? Because I may just cut all that. Because
it might be better if you just pretend it's not in Canada.
I'm just the Canada slander is off the charts right now. Like before the show, I had some random person Drew knows walks in and just randomly ask me if I know what Degrassi is, which was made in like the 90s. Like, come on. But yeah, so that's a focal description of how my week has gone. Which is less than ideal, but hockey's back and the Leafs are losing. Basketball's back and the Raptors continue to lose. But the Jays got George Springer, and we thought we got Michael Brantley, but that promptly fell off a cliff when he decided to instead ditch us for the Houston Astros. So there's that, but I won't ramble on anymore. Josh, how's your week been? Hopefully better than mine.
Yeah, I guess so. I feel like not a lot has happened in the last like week and a half in terms of my life. Like, there's been lots of soccer stuff, lots of sports stuff. WandaVision debuted last Friday, so that's kind of been on my mind. That's a new Marvel TV series on Disney Plus. It's like the first new Marvel stuff since the last Spider-Man movie came out in July of 2019, so it's been a hot minute, but the first 2 episodes debuted and it was pretty good. It's got me excited for the rest of the show. The next episode comes out tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to watching that. But other than that, I mean, I feel like not a lot's happened. Been watching the Hawks. I assume, Drew, you've been able to watch the Hawks more now that you've been in Athens, so that's probably good. They've been something, man. They've been all over the place, and there's like kind of problems with Trae Young and John Collins, but not really, but like it's definitely not okay, but also there's all these other injuries. I don't know, man. The Hawks are just, they're just crazy. There's just so much happening.
Yeah, if those two
right
players
now
could be good, that would be great for my fantasy team, because they're not good, apart from Trae Young. He's done well. John Collins has been less than ideal.
It's still funny to me that you like don't like John Collins. I mean, it's fair that you don't like him from that standpoint, because all you know of him is through fantasy. But like for me and Drew, like he's doing great, man. Like I'm pretty happy with John Collins. He's definitely playing like someone who wants to get paid, which is another big storyline in Atlanta. So, but Drew, how have you been in this last week and a half since we last spoke?
It's been pretty good. Like Connor's school is cranking up, so that is cool. I haven't had a whole lot to do yet. It's still in that like early phase where like you don't have really a lot of assignments left. But I'm like waiting for it to change, like turn that corner. The Hawks, I finally got to Athens. I get to watch them. They've won two in a row. I think they beat Detroit, and then they won their MLK Day game, which felt they had to win that MLK Day game with those jerseys and just MLK Atlanta. Had to
and
win
going
that
up against the awful Timberwolves.
Yeah, that, it was cool seeing Anthony Edwards, Georgia grad, number one overall pick, but I don't think he did too hot. I watched, women's national team played. Always good to see them in action. Like probably the most patriotic thing about the U.S. right now. Watching them dominate as always. Good to see them again tomorrow, which is exciting. Which we'll talk more about that. Not a whole lot. School's kind of been taken over my life, and good to get a break from school and talk about soccer with you guys. So excited for a good episode. And like we usually start off with, North Americans abroad, even though MLS is done, they have a quiet time. These guys are not done. Brendan Aaronson scored his first goal with Salzburg. It was just a friendly. I don't know who they played in the friendly. I didn't even see a highlight of the goal, so I did not know that happened, but just good to see him scoring. That's always good. Not a whole lot to say about that.
All I saw about the goal is I think someone said he like kicked it towards the keeper, like almost at the keeper, but it went in. So I don't
know.
Goal's
a goal, man.
I also assume that it was like a second or third division side, because you know that's what teams normally do. They usually pick a lower division team to just, you know, it's just a friendly. So
let's not bring up third division teams, please. Thank you. How is this not clicked in both your heads yet? Bayern.
Oh, they lost in a super. It's not super. Is it Super Cup? The German Super Cup?
No, it's just like the DF, the Pokal. Their U.S. Open Cup, the German Open Cup.
But those have been like full of upsets. Like Barca and Real lost, right?
Madrid lost to a third division side.
Okay.
Bayern, okay. I think Bayern only lost to a second division side. I mean, obviously, I mean, it's freaking Bayern Munich. Like, they still shouldn't have done
it
that.
All is bad, yeah.
This is literally the defending UCL champs that are still, like, they've still won, like, 20 straight Champions League games, and then they lose to a second division German side. So, it is funny.
Hey, Liverpool lost at home today.
That was weird.
Yeah, it was
69
like
games in a row.
That's crazy. But exciting news of a team that did not lose to a lower division side in their domestic cup. Juventus won the Italian Cup. I'm not sure what it's called, but Weston
Super
McKinney.
Supercoppa. Like that.
Weston McKinney became the first American to win that trophy. That was pretty awesome. I don't know if you, Josh, got to watch any of those games or that final. I don't even know if it was on ESPN Plus or not. They might have changed it up on us. But I don't think we have a lot to say about that, but that's always good to see him winning that. Matthew Hopp continues to score. Just came out of nowhere, because I had no idea who this guy was at first. And then he scores a hat-trick for Schalke, saves them from not winning a game in a year. Scores a hat-trick, and now he can't stop scoring. So, Josh, as the resident Schalke fan, I know we don't talk about them a whole lot because McKinney left, but this is good news for Schalke. You have another young, promising American. Like, what has it been like to see Hopp tear it up and save the Americans, saving this Bundesliga team?
It's hilarious that you mentioned that McKinney and Juventus didn't lose to a lower division side. And I thought you were going to use that to segue into the Schalke thing. And in my mind, I was thinking, nah, Schalke just loses to top division teams to the point where they get relegated. But yeah, no, it's cool to see Matthew Hopp scoring. So Schalke is definitely getting relegated. Like, there's no way they're going to get out of it. So I think a best scenario situation for this is that Hopp can use it to get a transfer somewhere else. I mean, it's kind of what McKinney did. Like Drew was alluding to, you know, Schalke have not been good in a long time. If the 359 days without a win was any hint towards that. But, yeah, you know, McKennie, he shined in a bad Schalke team, and he used it to go to Juventus. So what the heck is Matthew Hopp going to do? I was talking to a friend about it. I could see him going to another Bundesliga team. German teams really do like to pull from the smaller clubs. I hate calling Schalke a smaller club, but in this case, I guess it's kind of true. So honestly, it would be kind of cool if like Bayern picked up Matthew Hopp. I'm not saying it'll happen, but it totally could. But other than that, with the way these Americans seem to just get to these giant clubs all of a sudden, who knows where he's going to end up? But I think he can use this to get a transfer. Actually, I think I saw somewhere that his contract actually ends in the summer with Schalke this summer.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's another interesting wrinkle. I don't think Schalke are going to try to move him right now to profit off of him, but they're definitely going to want money in return because they're not even doing well financially. So I think that's something to watch for really while this transfer window is open. It is possible, I guess, that Schalke could sign him and then transfer him in the summer for money. Maybe they can work out a deal with someone. I don't really know, but definitely something to watch for.
I like that Bayern rumor because I think that Bayern's backup, ignoring Choupo-Moting because they just brought him in, but I'm pretty sure Xerxes has been in some transfer rumors recently.
There's a guy named Xerxes?
Yeah. He's a young Dutch kid. He's actually pretty good. But that might make some sense as like a third striker option for Bayern. Although I don't know what their plan is with Ulf, I think is how you say his name. Ulf, something like that. Who plays for their third division side or lower level. I'm not sure what the rules are in Germany in terms of what level they can play at, but that could make some sense. Like, I could see Hopp potentially being a fit there. But who knows? Like, obviously Schalke are not in a position to demand very much. And if I were Hopp, I'd probably want to desperately get out of a club who only have won a game, maybe two games in the span of a calendar year. But maybe he likes it there. Who knows? He's promising. He's on a tear. I'm shocked he hasn't gotten a Team of the Week card in FIFA yet. Which, speaking of FIFA, they're releasing, I believe, their Team of the Year tomorrow. And I think Davies is going to be the left back in the Team of the Year. So I have saved a lot of packs to hopefully pack him. It's just another North American doing incredible things in Europe. Jonathan David has awoken, I think is the best way of putting it too. And he's been doing pretty good at Lille. He just scored a 90 plus minute winner for them to actually get them a win, which was huge. And I think Lille are doing pretty well this season. Again, it's just more young North Americans doing good things in Europe. So we'll have to see what happens. There were more rumors today surrounding Brian Reynolds from, I believe it was Tom Bogert?
Tommy Scoops. That's all I know.
Yeah.
Yes, it's Tom Bogert.
Yeah, I think he had it first. And then the transfer aficionado. Oh my God, how am I forgetting his name?
Fabrizio Romano.
Thank you. Fabrizio Romano picked it up as well. So it's looking like he might end up at Roma for a pretty decent fee. But again, it's just going to be something we have to watch. But something that hasn't exactly been ideal and something less positive for everybody except for Christian Pulisic, or I guess everybody except GQ, is Christian Pulisic's photo shoot.
Not
what
positive.
Was he thinking? That was not positive.
There are lots of positives to take away from
that
it.
That was wonderful. It broke soccer Twitter there for a second.
Exactly. Think of all the exposure he's getting. All the PR. What's the saying? Any PR is good PR?
No. Not that PR. That photo shoot is on the same level as the Landon Donovan U.S. World Cup, like, 2002.
That's insulting to those. That's insulting to the water fountain photos. That you would even put those is in the, that you would even put that in the same echelon is
the water
insulting.
Fountain photo walk so Christian Pulisic could run. That's this
exactly.
relationship. The water fountain photo will always be first in the soccer world.
Somebody's got to make like a museum of terrible photo shoots involving
Pablo from The Athletic. Probably doing it right now.
Dude, he's probably got a shrine in his like house or apartment. He's like probably got a room set aside for all the amazing photos he's collected.
Listening to this podcast, just coming up with ideas. We're going to get an article next week of the museum of the U.S. National Team terrible photo shoots. Like, I honestly don't know what he was thinking. That was so bad. It was so bad. There was no way to justify that.
I don't think it was that bad. Like I said, personally, I didn't like his haircut, and that actual interview itself
wasn't. That's the issue you had with the pictures? His haircut?
Yeah. What else am I supposed to judge the photo shoot on? I mean, obviously the outfits, which I didn't have a problem with, and the poses were not great, but who am I to judge fashion? I don't know. But as far as his haircut goes, I don't think the fade looked good.
In what way are you able to judge haircuts if you can't judge photos, like the outfits of the poses?
Here's the difference, right? Okay, I can go to a barbershop and get a haircut like a person, right? I can just be like, hey,
oh, that's
Captain
nice.
America. Like,
aren't you lucky?
Give me the, not like right now. I mean, in general, like, hey, make me look like Chris Evans, right? Like, give me the same hairstyle. You know what I can't do? I can't say, give me this $20,000 outfit. Dude, the rings he had on his finger were like $3,000 each. So who am I to understand fashion if I can't do fashion, but I can do hair? I could go out, yeah, tomorrow because I'm in Georgia in the US, blah, 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 blah. Let's pretend the pandemic doesn't exist. I could go out tomorrow and get my haircut done like Christian Pulisic. I cannot go out and buy his same outfit. So who am I to judge fashion, you know?
Ah, you lucky, lucky expletives. As you continue to get vaccines and Pfizer is holding ours hostage. But let's move on to something less controversial in the U.S. men's national team and U.S. women's national team, which, if we're being honest, probably isn't less controversial on this podcast because we both have very, very different views on these two teams. But Andreas Perea makes his one-time switch from Colombia to the U.S., currently plays for Orlando. He was brought in last camp but didn't play in the team's only game. Was this the right decision for him? Do you think he would have had a shot to play in the Colombian national team, or do you think he has a better shot at getting into the U.S. men's national team?
I don't know, because I mean he's 20 years old, I think, so he's not too old, and he's kind of breaking in with this young group of midfielders. I believe he's more of a defensive midfielder according to Transfer Market, so it's not like he's going to have a walk in the park breaking into that midfield at all. But I'm not familiar with Colombia's midfield right now, but I think it kind of, I mean, it's kind of like the Ayoba Canola situation, right? I mean, you have a situation where it might be harder to break into a team, but that team might be more successful if you do manage to find a way into the team. Just to clarify, this does not cap tie him, correct?
I don't think cap ties have anything to do with that. He's like, he's now officially
so he's an American citizen. So yeah. The choice has been made.
Well, he was actually born in the U.S., okay. But he originally played. He did cap tie with the Colombian national team because he played with their youth. He played their U-17s and their U-20s. So that's why he had to file the one-time switch. So now he has done so. And thus, he can never go to another. He can never play for another country.
He's going to play for the U.S. men's national team for the rest of his career.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean Ayla Canola has to file that one-time switch because he came up with the U.S. program?
No, I don't know what the exact rule is. I think it has to do with tournaments, like if you play in tournaments versus just playing in friendlies or even qualifying. And I know the rules for the youth ranks are different than it is for the senior ranks, I'm pretty sure.
It would be great if FIFA could make something not complicated for once, but
keep dreaming.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I just want to say about Pereira, I don't even really know that much about him. Like, he wasn't even, well, I don't even know. Maybe he was a starter for Orlando. Drew's right. He's really young. I have seen some people sort of tabbing him as like a like depth for Tyler Adams, which I think is super interesting because I've seen a lot of people say that we're actually kind of thin in that defensive midfield spot. So I mean, obviously he wouldn't be doing this if he didn't think he was going to be getting playing time. And it's also interesting that Berhalter and his staff like went after Pereira. I mean, obviously this has been in the works for a little bit because he was in that last camp. So definitely something to keep an eye on going forward. I'm certainly interested in how he fits in to the U.S.'s plans.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting to see how he pans out for them. It's going to also be interesting to see how badly Trinidad and Tobago lose on January 31st, because that's going to be a just absolute massacre by the men's national team. And I saw rumors that apparently Canada might be playing the U.S. tomorrow or very soon in some sort of scrimmage.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
I can't remember who tweeted that. I saw something like that.
Where is Canada meeting for their national team camp? Oh, okay. That would make sense that they're both there.
That's why I was so confused why they didn't have a friendly. Like, it would have made too much sense because they're both in Florida, but instead the U.S. decided to bring in Trinidad and Tobago to promptly stomp them. But
never count them out, as we've learned.
That's the one country you can't count out.
That's the one.
Never again.
So one country every country can count out apart from the U.S. men's national team.
Exactly.
So hopefully the U.S. lose, because that would just be peak 2020 and 2021. Just superb. But I have a feeling it'll be more like the U.S. women's national team's game against Colombia, where they destroyed them 4-0. And Sam Uys scored a hat trick. And the fourth goal was scored by the other Mewis and Christie. So I don't think there are any brothers on the U.S. men's national team right now. So we're going to have to figure out some sort of way where siblings can score some way so that they win 4-0. But do you guys have anything you want to add to the national team camp stuff?
Not really. The women do play again tomorrow. They play Colombia again, I think, also in Florida. So that will be exciting. We got to see Katerina Macario for a second there. We talked about her last episode. She looked really good. Young player, chose the U.S. So that's exciting to see where she goes. It was the same old domination I think we're used to. So not a whole lot to add from the women's national team front.
One thing I do want to mention, just from watching the game, it's incredible how the U.S. women just go. They like don't stop. Like I was sitting there watching the game and they were already up, 2-0, 3-0. It's obvious they're like way better than this particular Colombia team, who's dealing with some COVID absences and was playing two teenagers along their right side, which was the side that the U.S. had Lindsay Horan and Megan Rapinoe on. So like Colombia was never going to stand a chance. But what was amazing to me is, there are different phases of a game. And some teams say, we're going to press first 15, sit back second 15, press again the third 15, whatever. They come up with these plans. And the U.S. never once took their foot off the gas. I'm like watching and I'm thinking, just pass. Just like pass around in the back a little bit. Just possess the ball, like chill. Like, why are you guys going so hard? And then it dawned on me that these players are playing, presumably for example, the Olympic squad this summer, although based on some news today, it looks like the Olympics isn't happening. But just for a second, let's assume it is happening. They only get 18 players on the roster, which is insane because you look at the 23 the U.S. had for the World Cup in 2019. And then you've got players like Katerina Macario. And I don't even think Christy Mewis was on that World Cup team. So you get players like that you've got to factor in now. And then you've got older players like Carly Lloyd who are refusing to go gently into that good night, and Rapinoe's not going to go down without a fight. So it's just incredible. You see all these individuals, they're trying really hard to secure a spot in a squad like the Olympic squad, and so it is just amazing to see them go and go and go and go and just attack constantly. And honestly, it could have been a 13-0 game.
Like they're the best team on the planet,
which is why if I was manager, I wouldn't have them going 100% all the time, because I feel like it's in a friendly, because I feel like it's kind of unfair to Colombia, but also I wouldn't want to risk any of my players. But also I understand that they have to impress the manager. Especially for players that subbed on, like they have to make the most of their situation in order to get a spot down the road.
All right. If you say so. Drew, do you have anything you want to add to that?
No, it's always good to see the women dominate. We're used to it. So good to see them do it again. Good to see young players finding their way in there, but not a whole lot to add.
All right, let's get back to MLS and talk some more transfers. Specifically, 26-year-old Jordan Morris finally heading to Europe. He's joining Swansea City on a six-month loan. He was excused from the U.S. men's national team camp for quote-unquote personal reasons, which I think we all know what those personal reasons probably were. But what do you guys think about this transfer? Do you think this was a good fit for Morris? Do you think that this will be a potential for him to stick in the championship? I believe Swansea are currently sitting second in the league. What do you think about this transfer for Morris and for Swansea City?
I am cautiously optimistic. I think, like most people, it kind of seemed out of left field. It's kind of a weird choice. Most people are probably in agreement that Jordan Morris is a Premier League caliber player. I think he could easily be on a mid-table, low-table team. So for him to, you know, go with a championship team is really interesting. That being said, you can understand why he did it. Swansea are probably going to get promoted. At the very least, they're looking for reinforcements in order to get promoted. And so Morris can definitely factor into that. But yeah, you know, it's interesting. He wouldn't be doing this if he didn't feel like it was going to help him. And he's definitely at a point in his career where he doesn't really have anything to lose. He's pretty much a regular on the national team. He's proven he can perform on an international level. He's proven he can dominate MLS. So why not do this six-month loan that could potentially turn into a permanent move, or he could even springboard into a mid-table team? I could definitely see him playing for a club like Wolves, who like to sit back and counter, or, you know, a team like Burnley, which I believe in my FIFA career mode, he actually did transfer to Burnley. He's like in the Premier League. Also, Sebastian Blanco plays for West Ham United in my career mode. It's so strange, man. It's so strange. But so, you know, Jordan Morris, you know, would fit in great on a counterattacking side, I think. He's clearly got the speed for it, and he's just so dangerous when you play him a through ball into space. So, Drew, do you have any thoughts on Morris going to Swansea City?
Not a whole lot that he didn't touch. I know it was one article, Chris Smith, who I think still writes for the website, wrote, and it was kind of interesting that I think a lot of people eventually were wondering if this would happen because, like you said, how much he's dominated MLS. And it's interesting that it's a six-month loan. It kind of feels like this tryout type deal. Well, let's see how he does in this, in a Premier League level side if they get promoted. And I think second place, they don't do that playoff. I'm not sure of the rules between the championship. So looks like they'll be promoted. But yeah, I mean, looking for reinforcements. Exciting to see if he keeps it up that he does. Because, like, yeah, he's dominated MLS. He's won. He's been on arguably one of the best teams across MLS lately. So I'll be interested in going from that to Swansea City. We'll see how he transfers to that. But yeah, I think it's just interesting because this idea of him going to Europe has been floating around for a long time. And like Josh said, the move specifically to Swansea City on a six-month loan kind of came out of nowhere. But I think it was in the back of men's national team fans' head that what if he goes to Europe? So it's cool to finally see that happening. The six-month loan is interesting. Hopefully he'll make do with that 6 months, and then we'll see what happens from there, if Swansea want him or not. I imagine if he helps them get promoted, that's going to be a pretty hard sell not to keep him. But I'm excited about it. I think it's something men's national team fans have been wondering for a long time, and finally excited to see Morris in Europe.
How do you guys think this will affect Seattle then? Because obviously he's going to likely, we'll get to the whole force majeure stuff, but he'll likely miss the start of the season.
I think Seattle's going to be fine. I mean, they might not be going to MLS Cup Seattle, but I think we got to remember they're in the same league as like the Vancouver Whitecaps and FC Cincinnati. Like, they're going to be better than them. They're going to be better than DC United and the Colorado, maybe not Colorado, but they're going to be better than most teams in the league. Maybe they don't win the Shield or anything like that, but they'll be just fine. Maybe they won't be the Seattle of old if they miss him for a while, but I'm not worried about Seattle.
I think they'll be fine. They still have Nico Lodero and João Paulo and Raul Ruiz Diaz, so that's not an issue. They also have like some pretty solid academy kids that I know that have been playing with their USL side. So maybe it's time for those kids to start getting some minutes. So that'd be interesting. One thing I am looking forward to with this particular transfer, though, is, you know, what kind of effect will this have on MLS? Because MLS is starting to finally develop this reputation for selling on young talent, specifically, you know, teenagers or, you know, young 20s. So for a player like Jordan Morris, who's in his mid-20s and is clearly in his prime, this is just something to keep an eye on. I think this is going to be a good marker for how much the league has grown and how competitive MLS is on its own. So I'm definitely excited for whatever effect that may have.
And another player who might be joining Morris in Swansea is Paul Arriola. He's obviously coming off the ACL tear. So what do you think about this rumor of Arriola potentially joining Swansea?
I think this is also really intriguing. I don't have any doubt that he'll do well there because he's spent time playing in Liga MX. So we've already seen him abroad before. He was there before he went to DC. Whereas, you know, with Jordan Morris, he's only been in MLS. So I don't think there's as much question for Arriola. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's coming off the ACL injury, but with the way that ACL surgeries have improved over the last few years, it's almost as if they're stronger now. I think Zlatan has even said, like, his knee is better than it was before he dealt with all that after he got his surgery. And he's still scoring goals at, like, 500 years old, so, in Italy. So, clearly something is right about the surgery. So, in terms of, like, a health aspect of it, I don't think it's a huge deal. What is intriguing to me is the DC connection, because one of Swansea's owners is also part owner of DC United. So, this could potentially create a relationship, and also with Swansea dipping into the other side of MLS with Seattle and Jordan Morris, is, I don't know, maybe there's a market for championship clubs now, which we're going to talk about more in a second.
Yeah, Jack Harrison is a name that immediately springs to mind for me. Obviously that was more of a City connection, but he's still tore it up in the championship. I wonder if we started to see this more often. Is the championship taking a flyer on not necessarily young MLS products, because I think they'll end up going to major European teams, but more of the maybe Jonathan Osorios, who are mid-20s, haven't quite gone to Europe yet, but are still a very good quality. I wonder if we'll start seeing players like that end up in the championship. Obviously, Arriola, he's 24, I think, around there, mid-20s-ish. Morris, obviously 26. And I think it can make a lot of sense for those players. And it'll obviously up the level of people's opinions on MLS if these players are succeeding in the second best league in Europe and being major parts of those teams at a mid-20 age. So I think this is really, really intriguing. Drew, do you have anything you want to add to the Arriola stuff?
Not really, except this totally came out of nowhere. This was totally not on my radar. Excited, though, like you mentioned, the DC to Swansea City connection. That's interesting. Didn't know that. Yeah, not a whole lot to talk about that. I think you guys knocked it out of the park that this is just another talent from MLS possibly going to Swansea. And yeah, I think it's interesting, exciting, and we'll see what happens from here.
Yeah, and another American who is going technically back to the championship because he was out on loan with Telstar in the Russian league is Sebastian Soto, who's been recalled from his loan back to Norwich, who are currently top of the championship. I don't believe he will be starting. I think he's likely going to be a part of their youth setup, but there's potential, I guess. What do you guys think about Soto? Do you think he will make any sort of any first team appearances, whether that be as like a bench option or even coming off the bench? What do you think about this whole Sebastian Soto situation?
I think he's definitely going to get some starts. I think he's definitely going to get a lot of minutes, only because they're canceling his loan like midway through, and they're sending out another U23 kid instead. So the fact that they're pulling Soto back in and they're pushing this other kid out tells me that they want Soto there. And the main issue with Soto was that he didn't have the Great Britain work permit or whatever, you know, that whole situation, which, by the way, major props to Greg Berhalter and his staff, because when they saw that Soto got that 3-game suspension after his red card, they pulled him into that last December camp because he needed those caps. He needed that international time to get this work permit. So really good job, really savvy of them to help Soto secure that. But yeah, the fact that they're calling him in mid-season, and Norwich is like 6 points clear at the table. Like, they're way ahead of Swansea right now. So I think it says something that they're trying to pull Soto in. So I expect him to play a lot. I don't think he's going to be back in their U squad. I think it'd be weird for them to bring him back for that.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough go for him to try to get in to start over Timu Pukki, because obviously Pukki's insane. But again, having him called back, I think, is huge. I'm not sure if he will get a lot of first team minutes. One of the rumors / reasons I saw they did call him back was so that they could send this other kid on loan, and they couldn't do both of them. Like, they need Soto to play on their U23 team. They need a striker for that. Although that may not be accurate. This is like a tweet I saw, so take that for what you will. But it's, again, a very interesting situation. Drew, do you have anything to add to the whole Soto loan recall?
Yeah, I think Josh pretty much said what I was going to say. That's really weird that they're first in the league. I know they were as ahead of Swansea, as Josh said, like 6 points clear, that they were calling this player. So I think that does say a lot about how high they view Soto and potential plans to play this guy a lot. So yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Kind of, if it's not broke, don't change it. So I'm not sure why they're doing this. But I mean, if you're canceling a loan, what, halfway through, like Josh said, in your first place in the league looking to get promoted into the Premier League, then obviously you have high plans for him. So that's exciting. But yeah, kind of don't understand why they're doing it. But that's just good that they think that highly of a player if they're willing to cut their loan short to bring this guy into their team, which they're already very clear and looking like they'll be promoted into the Premier League. So it's good they think that high of an American player for sure.
Yes, and we should mention all of this is if he can get a work permit. That's the big question, is will he be able to get a work permit in the U.S.? But quickly, other news from transfers abroad. Kaku appears to be leaving our Red Bull, New York Red Bull. He's going to be going on a free to Saudi Arabia. The club is, and a shout out to Josh for putting this pronunciation in, even though this is one of the teams who I actually could have pronounced, in Al Tawoun. They're, I don't know how good they are because I don't follow the Saudi league, but yeah. What do you guys think about this transfer quickly before I mention one other Saudi player potentially coming to MLS?
Horrible business by Red Bull.
Drew?
Not a whole lot of takes on it, except between that and Pity Martinez, maybe I'll start watching the Saudi Arabian league. I saw Pity scored a goal. It's kind of a lame goal, but maybe they'll knock on the door.
That was just the deflection. I was like, did this jerk score a free kick goal, like, not with us? And then he took a deflection. I was like, okay, good.
Because I saw the video. I saw him, like, gearing up. It was way outside the box. I was like, this is the Pity Martinez, like, South American player of the year. This is what we were expecting. And I see the shot. I'm like, okay, it's fine.
Well, speaking of the Saudi league, this was one rumor I saw from a Twitter account I've never seen before. But there was a rumor connecting Sebastian Giovinco to the LA Galaxy, but I don't think that will ever happen. Although I do know that Giovinco will definitely not be staying in the Saudi league. I know he hates it there. His family didn't even move there. I believe they're still living in Toronto. But what I have heard is Giovinco will either play in Italy or he will play in North America. Those are the two places he will play. So maybe it's not completely out of the question, but I think it's highly, highly unlikely, in my personal opinion, although I have no information on that. But yeah, I think that's pretty much all of the transfers abroad we have to cover. Obviously, we'll get into the in MLS transfers that are, we have just been flying all over the place, none of which involving Toronto, but I digress. Let's get into some MLS news. And do we really have to talk about this? Like, it's just so bad. The Montreal Impact's new rebrand to Club de Foot Montreal. the stupid, like, I'll let you guys talk first, but what do you guys think about the Montreal Impact rebrand to Club de Foot Montreal, which nobody outside of Canada will be able to properly say?
Yeah, not a whole lot of thoughts. Yeah, it's bad. I don't like it. The logo's lame. The name's lame, which I guess it just translates to English as Montreal Football Club. So, or just Football Club Montreal, FC Montreal. Yeah, Vancouver, don't change your name, please. Whitecaps, Sounders, Timbers, Rapids, Earthquakes. I think those are all the mascots that I'm thinking of. The Dynamo, that's kind of cool. So Nashville got a mascot, even though their name is SC. I'm a big mascot fan, so there's some creativity in Major League Soccer. But bad logo, bad name. I don't like it. I love the original names. Revolution, I think everyone's on board now. Don't mess with the Revolution. That's beautiful. So yeah, Montreal, just the next victim. We did talk about in the Slack that one city in Indiana with like the exact same logo. So I think we're all Bloomington, Indiana fans. Maybe there's a lawsuit there. For the sake of creativity in Major League Soccer, please, Indiana, come through when we need you the most. But yeah, it kind of sucks. The Whitecaps, don't change it. Keep it going. Save Canada. But not a whole lot of thoughts on that.
Yeah, I actually really like the crest. I wish the,
okay,
the gray
was I'm going to change better. That. Think of the backside of your cat and then look at that logo.
It's fine. It really doesn't bother me that much, even though, yeah, I saw that meme. Uh-huh. Someone made that into a meme already. But no, I like the crest. The name, yeah, it's stupid. I mean, whatever. Changing
the entire province of Quebec is now coming for your head.
I wish they'd change. Like, I don't mind if clubs update their crest. Like, you look at the Premier League, for example, and these clubs that have been around for hundreds of years, they go through refreshes all the time, or even like a club like Juventus. But changing the name, I don't get that. I wish they'd kept the Impact part of it. But yeah, I mean, I guess this is just something we have to get used to now. Please, soccer gods, please don't change the New England Revolution logo. Or if anything, just give that a little update. Maybe it doesn't have to look like it was made in Microsoft Paint in 1994, which it probably was. But we can keep the flag. You can keep the soccer ball. And like, it's a great ode to the World Cup logo from 94 when that was hosted in the US. So hopefully they don't mess that up. Although, because it's MLS and because these teams seem to not listen to their fans, they'll probably will.
We'll see. I know there's a petition going around for them to change it back, which, honestly, don't blame them.
For Chicago.
It did work for Chicago, and they did get a lot more fan involvement in that, so hopefully they release that pretty soon, and hopefully it looks good. But yeah, this Montreal rebrand is terrible. I hate all of it. Please just go back to the Impact. And I'm a Toronto FC fan, so seeing Montreal suffer is perfect for me. But yeah, I don't like this at all. I don't think it works, period. But we don't need to talk about this Club de Foot Montreal, because as I mentioned, nobody outside of Canada will be able to say that properly. So let's get into something even more fun, which are league negotiations that appear so far to only be one way, in that the MLS gave the MLSPA proposal and the MLSPA has not responded yet. What do you guys think about this entire situation? Where do you think it goes from here?
You know, we talked a bit last week, you know, whatever it was, week and a half ago, 10 days ago. And at the time, really only the league had said anything about it. The Players Association hadn't really responded. And now we're getting this whole, you know, we don't know where this 30 days came from. And now you've got the Players Association Twitter account throwing hands on Twitter. And it looks kind of silly. And now people are starting to brace themselves for not having a 2021 season, and I don't know if that's the right response to this, but man, this is really weird, because like a year ago when we were gearing up for a CBA battle, like it was pretty cut and dry. You know, it was the players need to you know, they had an agenda for what they wanted. The league had an agenda for what they wanted. It seemed like they came together for pretty good middle ground. And now here we are. And obviously the pandemic changed a lot, but it's just, everything feels like it's degrading to the point where the players, sounds like they don't even want to do anything. Like, they just don't even care at this point, which I don't blame them. And then the league also is just, they're just being disrespectful to the players. So I'm honestly trying to pretend that this isn't happening. Like, I'm living in ignorance that Atlanta is coming back to training camp in a week and a half and they'll actually start and have a season. Like, I'm just trying to pretend like I'm the dog in that meme where everything's on fire and he's like, this is fine. Like, that's me just hoping that there's an MLS season.
At least Toronto will have a game, because we do have to play the CPL team once, but that'll be a massacre. So I don't know if that counts. Drew, what are your thoughts on the entire negotiation situation right now?
Yeah, like Josh said last week when we talked about, there's kind of just this wonderful ignorance, like Josh mentioned, that I wish we still had now, but there was, we didn't know a whole lot, so there was kind of room for optimism. And I think, as we all expected for it to go down, because it's Major League Soccer, it's gone down like that. It's just players not, the 30-day window, that I think that's my biggest issue, that the players not knowing what's going on. Because if anyone should know what's going on in this process, it should be the players. So them saying they don't know where something came from is just inexcusable, between communication, whether it's between the league, the owners, and the Players Association, whatever. But that's my biggest issue in it, that they don't know what's going on fully, because I think they should have a say in this and know fully what they're getting into. But yeah, not a whole lot. The whole Twitter thing was just like, just this just coming out even more public when you have the Players Association clapping back. I don't know who the heck runs the Players Association Twitter account. I bet it's Breck Shea. Breck Shea runs MLSPA Twitter. That's my take.
It's got to be whoever was running that stupid COVID account.
Oh, I wonder what happened. Right? It's Breck Shea. I said it's Breck Shea for both of them. There it is. He does both. So I'm not too thrilled about it. Like Josh said, I mean, last week we were kind of, we don't know what's going on. We'll see what happens. Maybe it won't be too bad. Maybe they'll have it together. And here we are a week and a half later, and it's not turned out well. So I'm not too optimistic about it. I don't know if I'm on the gear of affecting the season as a whole, but it's definitely not where it was last time we talked. It's taken a turn for the worse. So I'm not very optimistic about it, but we'll see what happens.
Here's why I'm optimistic about it. What expires this year in MLS?
TV deal.
The TV deal.
Bang, I guessed right. Connor loves those things.
Yeah. MLS need to play if they want money, big money from that TV deal. They will not hold the players out this season. They will play this season. They don't have a choice. They will figure this out, or they will not make no changes, and then next year it'll be absolute hell. One of two things will happen. One, MLS will just give in and they'll accept what the players end up proposing to them. Or we'll play this year and MLS will negotiate a big TV deal and next year will be a complete dogfight. But that also may not happen, because ESPN probably won't be very happy if MLS doesn't play next year immediately after forking over a ton of money for a new TV deal, or whoever buys the rights to MLS. So I don't think people should be worrying about this entire situation as much as they currently are. This will get figured out. There will not be any sort of lockout, and if there is, it won't be for an extended period of time, maybe just the start of the season, and then MLS will realize, wait, we have a TV deal coming up, which is more important than not paying the players a couple million bucks every year for a few years, when we could be making potentially tens of millions more on the TV deal. So MLS are trying to negotiate from a place of power, when in reality, they don't have any, well, they don't have much leverage, because the players know they need to play. The league knows they need to play. and this entire situation will not last. In my personal opinion, this situation will not last. I think we will kick off in mid-March. Whether or not we can physically kick it off in mid-March because pandemic, who knows? But if MLS can kick off in mid-March, they will kick off in mid-March, and I don't think that the force majeure clause will pose a major threat to that happening, personally. Do either of you have any counters to that argument, and do you think that makes sense?
I actually don't really have a counter. I think that's a really interesting aspect of it that I hadn't really thought of, hadn't really considered. Honestly, that might really be what's going on, because that would explain why the players haven't really done anything. Like I said, they seem disinterested. So, you know, Connor, I think you might be onto something, you know, with the whole TV deal and them realizing that their games have to be played. As for the mid-March start time in the pandemic, I really do believe, well, I'm not going to get my hopes up because this country is inept and there's so much rot coming from the inside of it. But I would like to believe that under this new administration, the U.S. can get its vaccinations and testing sorted out, and therefore fans will be in stadiums sooner rather than later, maybe sooner than previously projected. Therefore, that mid-March start date might not be threatened after all. But like I said, I'm not going to get my hopes up.
The one thing that might throw a spanner in the works in terms of MLS starting mid-March is Canada. Because will MLS want to start with Canadian teams in the U.S.? Is the biggest question, because I don't think we're at a point in Canada right now, and I don't think the U.S. is in a point where we're feasibly going to be able to play games in both Canada and the U.S. Maybe they do something similar to what they did at the beginning of last season, where they have the three Canadian teams play each other a bunch, and then eventually, once they're able to, start doing inter-country play. But it's going to be, the next 2 months are going to tell us a lot about where MLS stands on a lot of issues and where the players stand in terms of using the limited leverage that they actually have, because I hope they do realize that they do have leverage in this situation, because they've been screwed over by MLS a lot, and it would be nice to see the MLS players get a win, and players in general get a win over their respective leagues, even if it isn't very big, if it's something small. But let's move on to some more player moves, unless Drew, you have anything you want to add.
Nope, let's dive right in.
All right, let's start off with LA Galaxy acquiring Jorge Villafania from Portland in exchange for the number 16 pick in today's Super Draft, which we're not going to talk about because none of us know anything about the Super Draft. Some future allocation money. What do you think about Villafania's fit with the LA Galaxy?
I think it's interesting. I guess no one knows how much allocation money that will be in the future. Super vague about that, so that's kind of a bummer. But yeah, like you said, the Super Draft pick, I mean, just drafting in general in sports is such a risk, right? I mean, you don't have to look far at MLS. You can just look in sports in general, right? Just drafting players, kind of a risk there. So having a player like Villafania, who has played in this league, he's 31, so he's a defender, so he can last for a while. He's played with Portland, he's played in this league for a while, played with Chivas, and won an MLS Cup with Portland, so he knows how to win. He played a lot in 2015. He's started 33 games and played in 33 games, even scored a goal and had 5 assists in their run to winning MLS Cup. So I'm a fan of it. Again, it's kind of hard to judge the move because we don't know how much money was sent that way. I'm excited to see what the Galaxy turn out to be this year. I think there's a lot of questions and interest about the Galaxy with all the moves they made, both managerial and players. So I'm a fan of it. I think he's going to provide just some, I don't know if you could say depth or how much starting time he's going to plan on getting with the Galaxy, but I'm excited about it. I think it's a good move. Anything really is up from here for the Galaxy. So I like it. From a Portland perspective, I think it's fine too. I think when you think of the Portland Timbers, you don't think of Jorge Villafañe being the guy that's going to beat you, right? So I'm okay with it. I like the move from both perspectives. Again, it's hard to totally judge the transfer because we don't know how much money is in there yet. And like I said, the draft, a 16 overall pick in Major League Soccer Super Draft, it's not that big of a deal. That sounds bad because these college athletes are pretty incredible soccer players, and Atlanta's picked up some pretty big gems in the Super Draft. But it's such a risk, so I'm a fan of it from both perspectives. Josh, what do you think about Villafañe going to Los Angeles?
Definitely like the move for LA Galaxy. With Greg Vanney there now, this definitely feels like a move that he wanted. This is a seasoned MLS fullback that he now has at his disposal. For Portland, though, I don't know. I don't really understand why they're sending Villafañe away. He's just been such an important part of that team in this past decade or however long he spent with them. Like you said, Drew, winning MLS Cup, and then he was starter for the other MLS Cup that they were in 2018. So, to me, I don't fully understand why they're sending him away. Actually, they did just get, what's his name, Claudio Bravo, I think, South American fullback. So maybe they feel so confident and they're getting younger. But even then, I don't really know Portland's backline that well. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I guess it just depends which way you want to look at it. Bad thing because there aren't any stars. Good thing because you don't know anyone because they're not that terrible. But I don't know. It is a little interesting from a Portland standpoint. It kind of feels like a risk from their end, honestly.
He was getting up there in age. He's 31. So might be just trying to get younger. And somebody who won't miss penalties would probably be beneficial. No offense to Jorge Villafañe, but he wasn't exactly the best at them in his time with Portland. So I think it sort of makes sense. And getting younger, I believe he was an international. So freeing up an international spot, likely replacing it with the guy who you just brought up. But again, interesting move by Galaxy getting another veteran, and Portland getting a draft pick and however much allocation money. Next up, we got center back Andres Reyes, who is signing with New York Red Bull. He played last season with Miami. He's only 21, central defender. Honestly, that's probably a good move, just if you can get a young central defender. Josh, what do you have to tell us about Andres Reyes, and will he be a fit on New York Red Bull?
So I don't remember much about Reyes and his time with Miami. He was the guy that got choked by Dom Dwyer and had to leave the field in that first opening MLS's back match. So that's kind of how I remember him. I think it's really interesting that Miami brought him on loan and then they didn't want to keep him, and then he went to Red Bull instead. So that's an intriguing aspect of it for me. So I don't really know what's going to go on with that. They're definitely getting younger, and we'll talk about Red Bull and center backs a little bit more in a second, but this is just Red Bull's getting younger, I think. It happened a few years ago when they brought in Tim Parker and they had Aaron Long, and what formed a really good center back partnership. So I feel like this is Red Bull trying to do that, get younger, get a new center back partnership. Also, keep in mind that Gerard Struber, this is his first year. This has got to be a move that he wanted. So in his high-pressing style, I wonder if he sees a lot of potential in Reyes and sees a good fit for his system. So definitely something to keep an eye on.
And speaking of Tim Parker, he was sold by New York Red Bull, or technically traded, to Houston in exchange for $450,000 in GAM, which can be up to $1 million with incentives. Josh, what do you think about that transfer?
I think it's a really good move for Houston. Tim Parker is still a decent center back. He is starting to get up there in age a little bit, I believe.
28?
Yeah, so he's definitely not out of his prime or anything for a center back, especially. So good move for Houston. who made a lot of moves, actually. We forgot to talk about it, but they also got Derek Jones today. Oh. 27. Wow, so Tim Parker's pretty young still.
He'll be 28 February 23rd.
Okay, so
by the start of next season, he's 28.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy, actually, because Red Bull brought him in, I think, back in 2018, which means he was only, 24 or 25. But anyway, good move for Houston. I think it's smart to get an MLS veteran. They've sort of struggled in defense. So, good move for them, I think. Good move for Red Bull, too, because Tim Parker, it kind of seems like he needs a change of scenery. We definitely were hearing less and less about him, and even Aaron Long to an extent, since that outstanding 2018 Supporters Shield winning season. So good move for Houston, good for Red Bull to get money, I guess. So probably a win-win for both sides.
Yeah, it's a big transfer. Potentially $1 million. It would put him on the same level as the Walker Zimmerman and Ike Parra transfers. Do you think that Tim Parker could live up to that hype? Or do you think Houston could potentially be overspending on a average to above average MLS caliber central defender?
It depends on the way you look at it. Let's just assume, for the purpose of this, the incentives are super heavily based on Houston winning or Tim Parker winning individual awards. It's probably safe to say that's not going to happen. Houston's still sort of a team in transition, although, yeah, it's MLS, pretty, a lot of parity. But, I think this is a good move for Houston in that they're really not spending that much for a proven center back, like a proven MLS center back. And I don't think they'll mind paying another $500,000 if it means that they're doing well, because it's probably incentive based on the team's success. So I don't think Houston minds that much. I don't think you'll have the same impact as Zimmerman and Oparo, though, but still good business, I think.
Drew, what do you think about this transfer?
Yeah, I think my biggest takeaway, when you look at Houston, that while they were so bad, if you look at the standings, it wasn't because they allowed this ridiculous amount of goals, right? I think when you look at the teams that didn't make the playoffs, they were one of the better defensive sides. As far as that, they still weren't great. But I think the biggest issue with Houston is not scoring goals, right? But like Josh said, it's not that much money for this guy. Now, if they'd spend a lot, I would be questioning, why are you spending this much money on a defender when defense wasn't your main priority? But they're not spending a whole lot of money on a proven defender. With the Whitecaps and with the Red Bulls, he was one of the better defenders on both those teams. So I like it a lot. I think Houston, that's not where their main focus is, but wasn't a whole lot of money they spent on him. So I'm not criticizing how much Houston spent on that guy, because proven defender in this league, he's won a lot. So I like the move. I think Houston's just working on getting better and better, and it's not hard to get better than what they were last year. So I'm a fan of the move for sure.
And Houston continued to be busy as they also acquired Maxi Arruti from the Club de Foot Montreal. I will always say Club de Football because that should be what it is, but they did Club de Foot instead. But Maxi Arruti traded from Montreal to Houston in exchange for central defender Alias Struna and a 2021 international spot. What do you think about this transfer for Montreal, and what do you think about this transfer for Houston?
Yeah, from the Houston perspective, like I said, goals were, I think, hard to come by in Houston. Inaruti has scored. He's proven. I'm trying to pull up the stats right now. Last year, yeah, he started in 10 games, had 5 goals and 2 assists. So he's not going to be the biggest goal-scoring threat in the world, but maybe just something to help out with Houston, because I think goal-scoring was their biggest weak point last season. As far as from a Club de Football Montreal perspective...
Club de Foot.
Club de Foot, I'm sorry. It's called soccer anyway. I don't know what Montreal's doing.
Okay, anybody outside of Europe is... Or anybody outside of North America and Australia is now coming for your head.
It's called soccer.
England invented the term soccer, so whatever.
Euro snobs.
All right, continue.
But from a Montreal perspective... Yeah, I think Montreal, it's just, I don't know. I want Montreal to be so good, because they made that run in the playoffs. Unfortunately, couldn't get a win. If I'm remembering correctly, it feels like playoffs were so long ago. But I'm not. I don't really know how to feel about this from a Montreal perspective because I don't think it makes a whole lot of noise in there. It's just kind of a move. So I'm not expecting too much from Montreal. I think that might be a problem that I'm not too excited or too thrilled about this transfer just because Montreal is nothing. I don't think they were one piece away from being a really good team, if that makes sense. So I'm excited about this from a Houston perspective, not too much from a Montreal perspective. Josh, what do you think about the moves from both teams?
This is a perplexing trade, in my opinion. So Maxi Rudy, he is an interesting guy, very interesting player. The reason I say that is because he has a propensity to shoot from really far away, just like take awful shots. Like that's his thing, man. That's like his mantra. So for Houston to go for that is weird to me. Now, he was playing well for Montreal, like Drew said. He was scoring a lot of goals, and for a while there, it really felt like he was putting the team on his back, and he helped propel them into the playoffs. And I just think that's a really big fluke. Like, I don't even think that's legit. So for Houston, I hope Houston isn't basing this move off of, like, a small run of good form. Maybe they see other benefits to it. And then on the Montreal side, why would you give away your best scorer? Why would you trade away your best scorer from this past season who was clearly doing well under Thierry Henry? So that doesn't make sense to me from a Montreal side. The only thing that does make sense is the 2021 international spot for Montreal. That tells me that they're looking to get, obviously, an international player. So I'm interested. It depends on who they get with that spot. You know, if they get a player that ends up contributing, you know, a decent amount more than a Rudy did last year, then good move from Montreal's perspective. But as of right now, I don't really understand it from either side. I don't even really know who Alia Ostruna is. I don't remember him playing for Houston much last year. So this is just kind of a weird deal to me. But who knows? Maybe it'll end up working out for both teams. And again, definitely going to have to keep an eye on that international spot for Montreal.
I was going to say it was to make up for the fact that Strunia was an international, but Ruti is as well. So very interesting situation. I wonder what Montreal will do because right now I think the only striker they have is Anthony Jackson Hamel. And while I like Hamel, I don't think he is necessarily a starting caliber striker on a good MLS team. I think on an average MLS team, he could be decent, but on a good one, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see if they bring in another striker.
Didn't they get rid of Anthony Jackson Hamel?
I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure they finally moved on from him. I think they let his contract run out and then they just didn't sign him and he's just a free agent right now. I mean, on the MLS website, it does show that he's still with the team, I think.
It says on Google he is. But from the Chronicle Herald, it does mention that, the title is Impact Says Goodbye to Raitala, Fanny Corrales, and Jackson Hamel.
Yeah, I just tried to click on his player profile on the Montreal page, and I got an access denied. So I don't think he's even with them anymore. So maybe they are going after a striker.
One of the lines in the article says, Renard said the team would not negotiate a new deal with Jackson Hamel. So I guess he's gone. So they don't have a striker, which is a problem.
No, it's not. You have Thierry Henry.
Ah, yes, Thierry Henry is going to come out of retirement. He's going to pull away Wayne Rooney and be a player manager.
Do you know just imagine how many times Henry is just standing on that touchline, and he's like, oh, man, if I was in right now, like, I would... you know that dude is like... Oh, yeah. He's probably just like, come on, just do what I would do.
It's not that hard. Meanwhile, it's a 40-yard free kick. Yeah,
exactly. You'd be like, come on. Exactly.
I don't know what Montreal are going to do. That's a very interesting situation. They're going to be busy. I joked about this in our Slack chat this past week, but I don't know how out of the question this would be. Obviously, Montreal have that connection to the Italian club. I'm blanking on their name.
Bologna. Yeah. Bologna.
Yes, Bologna. Obviously, they have that connection to Bologna. And Bologna have been interested. One of the rumors in the past was that they would acquire one of Rossi or Rodriguez. I can't remember which one. And then send them on loan with Montreal.
No. There's no way they're going to do that. That would be... I feel like MLS would block that move.
Why?
Because they can. And I feel like they would... Well, I don't know. It would be a really... really rare case, I guess. There's not many teams that can... That are partnered with teams from other countries in that fashion. So, I don't know. But I just feel like the league wouldn't allow that.
I disagree. I think they probably would. But, again, who knows? Like, nobody knows what the league is ever thinking. But we should continue on because we've been going for 70 minutes. And we still have to talk coaching, which includes me crying. But we'll get there. Next.
What episode doesn't include that?
Honestly, there aren't a lot. And that's... a sad, sad situation. Final transfer, Bobby Wood is signing with RSL, who are still looking for a new ownership. He will be joining in the summer on a mid-level TAM deal, according to Sam Stajkal. And he most recently played for Bundesliga 2 side Hamburg, where he was making $3 million a year. So a bit of a step down for him, because I believe the max TAM you can make is $1.5 million. And if it's mid-level, it's probably sitting in the $800,000, $700,000 range. So his salary is decreasing quite a bit. But what do you guys think about this transfer for Bobby Wood, who's moving from a Division II Bundesliga side to RSL? And what do you think about this transfer for RSL, who, if you do remember, just sold Glad, I believe, to LAFC? Was it Glad?
It was Corey Baird.
Baird.
Yeah. Yeah, this is interesting. I feel like Bobby Wood could do well in MLS. He wasn't playing much because he didn't want to, and the team wanted to move him, but he was like, I'm not leaving, because he was making so much money. So I don't really blame him. But yeah, I don't know. I can't imagine that this guy is like really fit right now. Obviously he's got time to get fit, because he won't be joining RSL for, you know, about half a year. Hopefully RSL don't overpay for that. They do. I feel like they've always needed a striker. They just like don't have one. And playing Demir Krylock as your striker, while it is wildly entertaining for a neutral fan, I'm not sure it's what RSL want to be doing. So I think this is a pretty good deal. I feel like there's a little bit of risk in that they're doing a TAM deal, although this is definitely better than that potential DP deal that Wood was always rumored to sign with, you know, insert MLS club here. I think most recently Cincinnati. So definitely interesting. You know, obviously we'll have to wait a while to see him in action in MLS, but you know, it could be a good move for him. I'm sure he wants to get back into the US national team, and this could be a way to do so.
Drew, what do you think?
Yeah, I think first off, I totally forgot about Bobby Wood. The last time I remember Bobby Wood, it was a game against the Netherlands, and the U.S. won. And I think he scored the game-winning goal or something like that. So that's my favorite Bobby Wood memory. Honestly, one of my favorite U.S. men's national team memories in general. But yeah, I think Josh brings a good point up with the risk this team has. This is one of the worst offenses in the league. Only better than Cincinnati and Atlanta United, which not great company to be in for the 2020 season, only scoring 25 goals. So that's good. They're spending money on a goal scorer. Again, I don't know how much he was doing in the Bundesliga second division. But like Josh said, it's not a DP contract. So if you're looking at it from a money perspective, this could be a bigger risk and this could be worse. Yeah, I mean, RSL trying to fix that, whether or not he'll be worth the TAM deal. Obviously, yeah, TAM has a little bigger weight than just a general allocation money move. But I'm excited about it. Excited to see him more, I think, than we've seen him in the past. Because I don't know about you guys, but I don't really watch the second division of Bundesliga. So like Josh said, as far as getting in the men's national team picture again, this might be a good way for him to do that, get exposure, play consistent minutes in the league. So I'm excited about it from a Bobby Wood perspective. I'm excited to see his name popping back up again because it feels like we haven't seen him in a while. And like Josh said, with rumors of him going to Cincinnati, who God knows could use a new striker or just a new goal scorer, I'm excited to see his name pop back up again in an offense that really needs it. So I think this is a really good opportunity for him to shine in a really bad club and hopefully maybe break into the men's national team picture a little more than he has as of late. Because obviously, I mean, he's a talented player and he's put on the crest before and played in big games. So I'm happy to see him back, see him in the league and finally seeing his name again show up more often than in recent years.
How old is Bobby Wood?
That's a great question, Connor.
I want to say he's only like 29.
28. He's from Honolulu, man, this guy.
Honolulu. Wow.
He's going from Honolulu to Salt Lake City, man. Playing in soccer in Salt Lake City in November. This poor guy.
Yeah, that's a downgrade. That's a definite downgrade.
Get an MLS team in Honolulu. Honolulu FC. Do it.
That travel as if it isn't bad enough. Worst thing on the face of the planet.
Go play in a baseball stadium in New York City and then go play in Honolulu, Hawaii, on top of a mountain on a Wednesday.
How about Montreal in November February to Honolulu in November or February? That's like a 12-hour flight right there. That would be nuts. Actually, probably 8 hours. I think... What is it? I don't know what the flight is. It doesn't matter. But once they invent time travel... Not time travel. Instant travel. We can start expanding to Honolulu. But final transfer. Do we even want to talk about this? Vancouver trading... Yeah. I don't think we talk about this. I think this is a joke. It's just money for a pick and money and an international slot.
I think it's worth just because Vancouver is loading up on these slots and we still haven't heard anything. So I think that's the only worthy thing is that it's another international slot and we still haven't heard anything.
They only have one open.
What? Weren't they loading up on them?
They only have one open because they took two internationals today.
Oh my goodness. That's what they're using them. Okay. That's disappointing.
And I believe, I don't know if this included the Caicedo rumor. So it might be two open, but they only have like one or two open.
Oh boy. Vancouver is
so,
not looking good.
Yeah. Vancouver are in an interesting situation. Although that could change if they sell Ali Adnan, which who knows? Let's move on to coaching, and let's wrap up with coaching because we've been going for 78 minutes. Inter Miami, finally, and by finally I mean basically instantly doing what everybody thought they would in hiring Phil Neville as their head coach. But something that I don't think a lot of people saw coming was they also hired Chris Henderson as their GM. Phil Neville, obviously, from the England women's soccer team. He played with David Beckham at Manchester United. Those links were everywhere, and everybody knew he was going to Inter Miami. That was basically set in stone the second Diego Alonso left, or left in air quotes. But Henderson is a bit of an interesting situation as he leaves Seattle's front office to become the GM of Inter Miami. So I want to know what your guys' thoughts are on both of these hirings. Obviously, we talked a bit about Phil Neville last week in terms of his fit with Miami, but what do you guys think about the Henderson hire? Is this the right move for Miami replacing Paul McDonough with Chris Henderson?
So I'll start with first with Neville, the hiring of Neville. Now it's official. Talked about it a lot last week, but I don't really know a whole lot about him, to be honest. Like, I just kind of – I learn about him by proximity from U.S. women's soccer Twitter and everything that they've had to say about him and his time with England. And I'm waiting to reserve judgment. I've got like some articles and stuff saved, things people have written about Phil Neville and his tactics and stuff that I want to read first before I have a concrete opinion. My gut says it's not a good idea. I can already say from a culture perspective, this is really dangerous because you've just had this Spanish-speaking, you know, Latinx background head coach with a lot of Latinx players, and now you're making a hard 180 and you're going to, you know, pip pip cheerio British guy. So I don't really think it's a good idea to do that. Just speaking from like Atlanta's experience, you know, going from a South American manager to a European manager, it kind of like destroyed everything. So don't really know about that. Gonna reserve judgment though. Gonna read about him a lot more. Now as for the Chris Henderson hire, I think this is, you know, really great. I'd actually never really heard of Chris Henderson. I know Garth Lagerwey, you know, because he's head honcho in terms of front office and technical director / GM / sporting director, whatever you want to call it. So, you know, but I mean, this is basically Lagerwey's right hand man. You know, Henderson has been learning from Lagerwey, so I think on paper this is a great move. Although, you know, I don't know. Paul McDonough had a good track record before joining Miami, and we saw how it didn't work out for him. And so Henderson's coming from a good track record and learning experience in Seattle. So I guess it all really comes down to, one, how much control David Beckham has, and two, how does Henderson mesh with Beckham and Neville? So there are a lot of dynamics at play here that are going to be fun to watch, if anything.
Yeah, fully agree. Drew, are you still there? And do you have any sort of thoughts on that entire Phil Neville hiring and Chris Henderson hiring?
Yeah, not a whole lot different than what Josh said, except that when he mentioned U.S. Women's Soccer Twitter, that's an interesting place to be. And they really don't like Phil Neville. So I think, and this, he was just steeped in controversy with England's women's national team, talking about equal pay stuff. It just seemed like the team made a semifinal run in the World Cup. Honestly, I think gave the U.S. women the biggest test of that tournament, almost came really close to beating them. But I think that was more in spite of Phil Neville, not because of Phil Neville. And I mean, like you said, with the culture change going from Latinx coach to this English women's national team coach, I'm not sure if it can get a bigger 180 than that. And like you mentioned with the Frank DeBoer thing, we know from experience. So I think Miami's just in kind of a crapshoot. It's a dumpster fire. However, with this GM hire, this might be the only good thing I think Miami has going for him right now. It's going to be hard to replace Paul McDonough because he kind of crafted a beast in Atlanta United before he left, and now we've seen where it's gone. But I mean, grabbing anyone from Seattle's front office, I think, is a win, and especially in this situation where it feels like nothing good is going right for Miami right now, whether it be players and managers. I think this is the lone win they've had in the offseason. So I'm excited about that. I didn't know anything about Chris Henderson. Like Josh said, I know this guy existed. The only Chris Henderson guy I knew, this is funny, runs a Twitter account that's like all about women college soccer, and I thought that was him. So I was like, they're just going the women's soccer, I'm all for it. Next, Jill Ellis is gonna go to DC United. I was excited about it, but unfortunately it was not that Chris Henderson. He's gonna stick with his college soccer. But yeah, that's the GM, I think, is the only win Miami's had in the offseason. But the manager thing, I'm not buying it. I think it's gonna be a mess from the start, but we'll see. You never know. But from the GM perspective, I'm super pumped about it for Miami.
And speaking of DC United's head coach, they brought in Hernan Losada from Beerschot in Belgium. First of all, that's the best name on the face of the planet, in Beerschot. But he's only managed the team for 2 years. He played most of his career in Belgium and is only 38. So first of all, what do you know about this guy? And do you think he'll be a good fit with DC United?
I don't know. I mean, he's only managed it for 2 years, and the team isn't good. I mean, they're in 10th in the league right now, so I'm not sure what... I mean, if you're DC United, what attracts you to a coach that has managed in the Belgian league for 2 seasons, and he's not managing at a Club Brugge or a Genk or anything like that. I mean, this team isn't something to write home about the Belgian league. So I don't understand what the mindset was about this hire. I mean, he's young, which that might be a positive, right? He's only 38 in managerial terms. That's pretty young when you got older guys running around managing good teams. So I don't see what was so attractive about this guy. I mean, you're managing a pretty bad team in the Belgian league for 2 seasons. So I'm not sure what DC United was. Oh, we got to get this manager because he's dominating the Belgian league. No, the team isn't good, and he doesn't have that much experience. So I don't really get it from a DC United perspective. I'm not too thrilled about it because I don't know what is so special about this guy. So I'm not really excited about it from DC. I think it's just going to continue a tough stretch of managers for them. Josh, what do you think about DC United finally getting their manager?
To be fair to Losada, he did help this team win promotion this year. So this is their first year in the top league. So to be 10th is not terrible for a team like that. That being said, I mean, Drew, you're absolutely right.
How many teams are in Belgium before he's 10th out of 10th? So that are,
I think it's 17, something like that. 17, 18.
It's got to be 18 or 20.
See?
Like,
so
18 like teams. Most.
Yes. So it's respectable, yeah, is my point.
Yeah, and especially for a newly promoted team, yeah, to be mid-table is pretty good. Another, I think, good indication about this is a lot of the fans are upset that he's leaving. Like, they don't want him to leave. So, obviously, that's good. That being said, yeah, I mean, the guy doesn't really have a lot of coaching experience. Like Drew said, all he's really ever known is the Belgium league. So, but that being, you know, with that in mind, I love this move for DC United because it is so not DC United. They've had nothing but Ben Olsen for the last, you know, 10 years or however long he was coach of this club. So it's just been the same old for forever, it feels like, especially for, you know, fans like Drew and I who really only heavily got into MLS like in the last like 5 years or so. So all I've ever known is a Ben Olsen DC United. And for them to go from Ben Olsen to Hernan Losada is like way different. So I think this could either pan out huge for DC or just completely sink the organization like even worse. So again, nothing but entertainment, at least on my end as a neutral. So I would say I'm pretty excited for DC, you know?
Oh, that is just brutal. Oh man. Okay. Well, DC.
Speaking of entertainment for neutrals. Yeah, we're going to do this. We're going to talk about this now. So since Connor won't do it, Toronto got their coach.
It was nice talking to you guys. I'll see you all next week. Yeah, have fun.
So Toronto's got their new coach. Drew, tell the listeners who that new coach is.
That coach is none other than the man who blew it in the 2018 Eastern Conference Finals. Chris Armas, former coach of the New York Red Bulls, is making his way across the border to Toronto. TFC fans pretty excited about this move, aren't they, Connor?
You joke, but I think initially people were incredibly down on it. But as I've read more from his quotes, from people's opinions on it and sort of breaking it down, I kind of like it. I think it kind of makes sense. Like with Greg Vanney, obviously Toronto's identity was slow build up. We're going to hold a fair amount of possession, but we're going to do it through passing. With Armas, it's going to be a completely different mindset. It's going to be high press all the time. And I think he could be a benefit to the youth because they'll actually get minutes as opposed to with Vanney. Not having him be as involved in player transfers did worry me initially. And I think it is something that you need to watch and that fans need to watch. But I don't think it's completely terrible. I honestly think it makes a decent bit of sense. Like, obviously, like, I am a bit biased in that I like the high press play style. I think I love the high energy. I think it'll be entertaining, but I don't know. It's going to be very, very interesting. And I'm working on an article on this now, but how is this going to impact Toronto's rosters and specifically the veterans? I can't see Jozy Altidore playing a high press. The guy could barely play Vanny's system. Never mind running for a full 90 minutes.
Dude, yeah, he can barely play in general.
Exactly.
Doesn't matter what system he's in.
Exactly. Well, he can score. I'll give him that. He can score. And that's true. Said that in my article, which will hopefully come out fairly soon. But what does this mean for him? How will he be used? Like, unless he's just trained nonstop fitness, I don't think he'll be able to play in this system. And are you just going to have a DP sitting unused on the bench? I think this might be the end of Jozy Altidore in Toronto. They're going to struggle to find a destination for him. But how is he going to play in the system? I don't think it's going to work. With the other veterans, I think it will. I think it'll work with Bradley because I think they could use him and put him in a role where he is the safety mechanism for if Osorio or Delgado mess up. So he is the backup. And one of his things that he's always been able to do, and you're shaking your head, but the one thing Michael Bradley could always do is run. The guy is a machine. He doesn't stop.
He said could.
I think he still can.
I don't think so.
The injuries will play a part in it, I granted. But I think he can still do it, honestly. I don't think he will be as big of a negative as you think he will. And I think if they utilize him properly, where they have him as the safety gap for Delgado and for Osorio, I think it could be really successful, honestly. Just having him as almost a higher up central defender and then help him distribute, help distribute on the offense, because that guy can pass a ball. And that's something that you don't lose as you go older. So I don't think that necessarily will be a problem. I think Altidore will be a problem. That's something they need to figure out. But apart from that, I think this roster is built pretty well where they could play that style. Obviously, they need a left back, but hopefully they re-sign Justin Morrow, and maybe he's your bench option instead and you bring in someone else. And they could use some more defenders, central defenders, but they picked up a left back today in the draft, I believe, and they took another defender late in like the fourth round, I think, or third round with their second pick. But I don't think this is that bad of a hire. What do you guys think?
So it's interesting that you say that Armas is going to press with them, because he said he's going to press.
He said in quotes.
That's really intriguing to me, because part of the issue with Red Bull is that he was kind of getting away from that with them. Because, I mean, Red Bull are like the, you know, if you're looking at a spectrum of like bunkering, like Jose Mourinho's on one side, and then you've got like Bielsa man marking on the other side, like Red Bull's like basically where the Bielsa side of things is. So, and he moved, you know, more towards the middle of the spectrum, which is a whole nother thing. But I initially was curious to see what he would do differently with an entirely different squad where the culture is not all about the high press, like the entire Red Bull culture is, both here and overseas. So to hear that is intriguing to me. Now, if he is going to go that route, then I don't think it's out of the question that Ollie Curtis moves on, like you said, from Jozy Altidore sooner rather than later. And I don't think, if they're going to do the high pressing, I don't think Michael Bradley factors in whatsoever from a playing perspective. Obviously, he's super important to the locker room. He is the captain, and he's super important to the community. He loves Toronto. Toronto loves him. So I don't think you move Bradley, even if he's not playing as much. But, I mean, Ollie Curtis's whole thing in Red Bull was getting rid of their most important players. He's the one who traded Dax McCarty away. He's the one who got rid of Sasha Kljestan. So not out of the question for Toronto to move on from these like really important guys, but I don't know. This Armas move does nothing for me. I want to see what he does with the team first. And like I said, it's strange to me that he wants to still do the high press when at least from my point of view, kind of failed at it with Red Bull. I mean, why else did he get fired? And then they still went after a pressing coach. So I don't know. This whole thing is strange to me, to be honest.
Here's why I think it's a little bit different this time than with Red Bulls. With Red Bulls, they only have one identity. That's all they've ever had is high press. I think what he was trying to do was bring in a second option so that you never knew what Red Bull would hit you with. Will it be the high press or will it be this new style that he's developing? With Toronto, they already have the laid-back approach. They've already got that set in stone. So now all he's got to do is teach him how to run, right? That's why I think it makes sense. And I think
that's fair.
I think you're underestimating Michael Bradley as well. I think that's last season was a bit of an outlier.
No, he's done. No. That was literally Father Time. We were watching Father Time snatch his legs from him. It's not going to get any better this year.
I disagree, but Drew, what do you think?
I think I'm leaning more toward Josh in this. I think this is going to be the beginning of a new era in Toronto, because you talk about Jose Altidore and what the heck that means. Michael Bradley. Yeah, I mean, you say teach players how to run, but you can't really, like, at some point they're not going to be able to run like they used to. I mean, so I don't know. I think this is going to be the beginning. It's interesting that it feels like these players are going to be leaving and that you have Jose Altidore not be the normal Jose Altidore and the Bradley debate. But if I'm not, like, Armas, he said he didn't really want a whole lot of hand in the transfers, which that's just interesting because it feels like new players are going to be coming. And I thought it'd be the exact opposite, that Armas would say, I want a hand in these players, which obviously I think he's still going to have some say in it. I don't think he's going to be, you know, at training one day and some random guy is going to walk up and be like, oh, this is your new DP striker. His name is whatever. But that was just interesting because I feel like those two things didn't connect. So that was the biggest thing that came to my mind. I don't think it's going to be – Toronto's not going to be the normal Toronto, I think, this year. I think it's going to be some big of a drop-off. But, again, I think they'll make the playoffs and they'll be, again, in years' time. In a couple of years, we'll see where this hire leads them. They'll be one of the better teams in MLS, I think. But it's going to be very interesting because he doesn't want a lot of – hand in the player transfers, but it feels like he needs to right now. But we'll see where it goes.
This move screams either extremely successful or extremely terrible, in my opinion.
So again, really entertaining for us neutrals. Sorry, Connor.
Yes, but I'm leaning towards extremely successful, which it's probably not a good thing for you Atlanta boys. Although we didn't bring up a transfer involving you guys. Lisandro Lopez.
That's not official yet, so it's okay.
It's pretty much official.
We'll save it for next week.
All right, we'll save it for next week. But, yeah, I think Armas, it's going to be an interesting fit, whether or not he's extremely successful with Toronto, but who knows? We've been going for 98 minutes, so unless either of you have anything you want to add to today's show, Drew, take us out.
Yeah, guys, thanks so much for listening to us ramble about Major League Soccer. We really appreciate all of our listeners tuning in. As always, like Connor was talking about, his article coming out, you can see it when it comes out on MLSMultiplex.com, as well as our other awesome writers cranking out content on the website. You can follow the website at MLSMultiplex on Twitter to see stories as they come out on social media. And you can visit us on social media as we rant about transfers on our own time. You can find Connor at CWG Somerville, Josh at Josh_Bolin, and myself at _DrewHubbard. So feel free to hit us up on Twitter and get mad at us when we have freezing cold takes about MLS. So thank you guys so much for listening. As always, please leave reviews on the podcast. We love hearing how we can improve. And thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the MLS Multiplex podcast. Check out all of the contributors' written work at MLSMultiplex.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.